Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. The collapse of an interstate bridge in Washington last week has once again brought attention to the roads and bridges and dams and tunnels that make up our nation's infrastructure. Accidents like that and the 2007 bridge collapse in Minneapolis that killed 13 people and injured scores more get our attention, but it is difficult to say whether they have been catalysts for change. The American Society for Engineers, since 1998, has published a report card on the infrastructure of America, assigning grades to roads and bridges and dams and so forth, and overall grades to each state. The nation this year has been given an overall score of D+. Joining us now by phone from Northern Virginia to discuss what that means is Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Patrick Natal. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks for having us, and thanks for drawing attention to this issue that's critical to our nation.
Why did report cards become necessary in 1998? What was the trigger for that?
Well, the trigger goes back to 1988 when a commission that was put together by President Reagan reported on the status of infrastructure. They gave a report card that the grades weren't that good, and nothing happened for 10 years. So at that point, the American Society of Civil Engineers said, as stewards of the environment, both built and natural, we had an obligation to review and make recommendations on how do we make this better? How do we make it better for the citizens of this country?
But doesn't some agency like the National Transportation Safety Board or some internal federal agency keep track of these sorts of things?
Well, there's a whole bunch of agencies that keep track of situations. For example, the NTSB, they really get involved when there's an accident. Like they went out immediately and started doing an investigation of what happened and why. The Environmental Protection Agency reviews the situation with water and wastewater and how we're treating our environment. The Federal Highway Commission looks at the status of the roads and bridges. They have the data. Unfortunately, nobody is reacting to the data. So our report card is a tool to help bring attention to this critical issue.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with Pat Natal. He's Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers. We're talking about the nation's infrastructure in the wake of the collapse of an interstate bridge in Washington last week. Nobody died. But that and other accidents like it, including the 2007 bridge collapse in Minneapolis, do draw our attention to such issues. If you have a question or comment for Pat, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So for those unfamiliar with the report cards, I just mentioned a few of the categories that you deal with. Can you kind of deconstruct that for us? Tell us what you look at and why and how?
Sure. We look at 16 different categories going from aviation, what's the status of our airports, to dams, bridges, roads, drinking water, wastewater, hazardous waste, levees, and on and on. The key things that drive our economy and allow us to live good, healthy lives. And we need to be investing in that. We've been underinvesting, and that's the problem. When we have 25% of our quarter of our bridges in the country that are either structurally deficient or functionally obsolete, we've got a problem that we need to be paying much more attention to make sure we're protecting the public. And you can't just let it wait. You know, you mentioned, fortunately, nobody was injured seriously or killed in this latest. But look back at Minneapolis. A lot of people did lose their lives. Look at Katrina, the impact it had on New Orleans. If we invested more up front, we could have reduced the impact.
Ohio has the second largest inventory of bridges in the U.S., according to that report, and one of the largest and most utilized road systems in the country. How does Ohio stack up against other states by your standards?
Okay, give me a second to look up specifically Ohio. Bear with me for a moment.
Yeah, no problem.
Go back to...
It was, I think, 2010 was the last time.
Ohio. Ohio, we have 1,141 structurally deficient bridges in the state of Ohio. That is not a good sign. That's out of, there are total of 9,271 bridges. Wait, I hit the wrong. Hang on, I just hit the wrong state, so bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
I have an inventory of every state. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Let me correct that. Okay, there are 2,462 structurally deficient bridges in the state of Ohio. That's out of 27,045 bridges. So roughly 9% are structurally deficient. Now, structurally deficient indicate that there is some condition that needs to be either mediated, repaired, or replaced. And then on top of that, you have another 4,300 bridges that are functionally obsolete, which means it can't carry loads of today's design, and it maybe the lanes are not wide enough, and it has limitations. So you're talking about close to 7,000 bridges out of 27,000 that have a problem. The good news is you're matching the nation. The bad news, you're matching the nation in a bad category.
But the nation's has a D plus now. It's had a D for many years prior to this. What's getting better?
Interesting. We had six categories that went up. Bridges being one. Bridges went from this is nationally. Bridges went from a C to a C plus.
Mm-hmm.
Reason for it: a lot of the states have seen the concerns and are investing more in improving that. Drinking water did improve. Rail improved. Roads improved slightly. Solid waste and wastewater. Rail improved because of private investment. The rail companies have invested over approximately $20 billion a year for the last 5 years. So they're trying to invest to improve the quality of service. Again, bridges, there was some investment on it. So where we've seen people take action and invest, we've seen improvement.
The report says that about $3.6 trillion investment is needed by 2020. Would that get us an A rating if we achieved that goal, or just keep us from further deterioration? I mean, there's always something going aging.
Right, right. And the plan that we have is to move the infrastructure to a B category. An A is a matter of perfection and ideally would be great, but we feel a good target would be a B. Now, the $3.6 trillion is a total cost for all 16 categories of infrastructure, and that also includes monies that are available. There's roughly $2 trillion already available. So the gap, still big, is $1.6 trillion between now and 2020, or roughly $200 billion a year. And I believe $200 billion a year is a reasonable target. We've invested $200 billion in a whole bunch of other initiatives if we want to make a difference. And this is, and again, it's not only all the federal money. It could be federal, state, regional, county, and it could be private investments like the rail.
You represent, of course, a group of people and organizations that would profit from a $3.6 trillion expenditure over the next 7 years, let alone the next two decades. How can people separate the vested interests from your organization from genuine judgments? How do you explain that to people?
That's a great question. Well, let me put it this way. If you're feeling ill, you'll go to a doctor, and a doctor will examine you and say, gee, I just did some tests, and you have a blockage. You need surgery. You need something to repair you. The doctor's not saying that because of making money. The doctor's doing it because they're trying to take care of your health. That's the same obligation we have. We're the doctors of infrastructure. We have an obligation, and we have an ethical obligation to present the facts and to be honest and upfront about this. So I look at us as no different than a doctor giving you advice of what you should do to fix your health. This is the health of our infrastructure. And the point, the case here is if the doctor makes a mistake, there's an impact on one person. If we make a mistake in infrastructure, it could be thousands of people.
Okay, so you said the money's there and you gave examples of how things have been paid for that has brought the nation from a D to a D plus. But going forward, there have been different suggestions about how to pay for things, sharing costs, user fees, whether it's tolls or gas, more gas tax. What is the recommendation? of the American Society of Civil Engineers for raising the money to pay for these kinds of things.
And our position is that we believe all forms of funding would be appropriate. An example, the national gas tax has not been raised since the early 90s. How many things can go that long without having an increase? And what's compounding it, so we have money that were based upon 1992-93 situation that we're raising to pay for the infrastructure. Since then, those costs have gone up. Well, materials costs have gone up. Labor costs have gone up. So that's a challenge. Second thing is we've encouraged, and this is good, to produce cars that are more efficient. Mm-hmm. So you're using less gas. And then on top of that, we have other cars out there that are alternate fuels vehicles, natural gas or electric vehicles. They're still using the roads, but not paying for the use of the roads. So increase in the user fee would be appropriate. Tolling where appropriate. And we just put in the Northern Virginia area, we put in a HOV hot lanes that are during peak hours, you pay more for it. That's an option. You don't have to use those lanes. That was put in by a lot of private money. So private investment is another way. So I don't think there's one silver bullet. There has to be a look at all the potential options and being creative. The governor of Virginia proposed doing away with the gas tax and increasing the sales tax to pay for transportation. So there's a variety of vehicles we could use, but we need to be coming up with more money. And the answer is not do it. That's not the answer.
Tell me a little bit about the increase in costs. How much have they increased since 92, 93?
I don't have specifics on that, but obviously most inflation, and you're talking about 20 years, and 20 years things have I mean, what has salaries gone up since that time? You're talking about definitely double-digit inflation since that time and beyond. So you're talking about magnitudes of increase that we need to pay attention to it.
Do you have any sense about the stimulus and what the stimulus, how much impact the stimulus money had on the infrastructure?
Well, the stimulus package, if you look at it overall, it was aimed at infrastructure was one of the keys, but only a small portion of it went to infrastructure. But what did go there did have an impact. Roads did go up. If you look at the nation's roads, they went from a D minus to a D. And a lot of that was due to a lot of paving. A lot of paving was done by the stimulus package. The challenge with the stimulus package, the whole concept of shovel ready.
Right.
It was not a priority of the major things that should have been done. There may have been things that were not shovel ready, but had really significant priorities that maybe should have been taken care of. So I think the intent was good, but the limitations created some problems. Now, some of the Tiger grants that the DOT, Federal DOT, Department of Transportation provided did do some really positive things. Bottom line is it did have a slight movement in the grade for roads. Issue, though, is a lot of paving, that's a short-term benefit. That won't be lasting. That's why we need to invest. And we have a new transportation bill being debated later this year in the Congress, and we need action on it. We need serious action on funding and on getting the appropriations to get the money in the hands of the states so they can provide the services to our citizens.
Patrick Natal, thanks so much for joining us today.
Anne, thank you very much, and thank you for drawing attention to this critical issue.
Patrick Natal is the executive director of the American Society of Civil Engineers. We did invite a representative from the Ohio Department of Transportation to the show today. Only one person is authorized to speak on this topic, and he is in meetings all day, we were told. So we will not have a representative from the Ohio Department of Transportation. But I wanted you to know that we did try. Coming up, we're going to hear more about the infrastructure in Ohio and ideas on how to pay for improvements. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Home Care Assistance, in-home care for older adults with the philosophy of promoting health, well-being, and quality of life for all clients, no matter their limitations. Information on Home Care Assistance is at 481-8888. That's 481-8888.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
If we're meeting for the first time today on a train, would you find me attractive?
Of course.
Before Midnight is the third film following the relationship of two lovers who met on a train in Vienna in the 1995 film Before Sunrise. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the director, Richard Linklater, and the stars Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 89.7 NPR News is your all-day NPR news station, bringing you news and information 7 days a week and always streaming at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the nation's infrastructure, its roadways, its bridges, its dams, its tunnels, and so forth. Especially Ohio. And by the way, we just spoke with Patrick Natal of the American Society of Civil Engineers. If you're interested in checking out those report cards, you can go to infrastructurereportcard.org and find everything you need to know there. Joining us now to discuss the infrastructure in Ohio and how we might pay for improvements is LaVia Brockman. She's executive director of the Greater Ohio Policy Center. It's a nonprofit group that develops policies to support urban areas. And welcome to the show, LaVia.
Thanks very much, Ann.
Also with us is Robert Lawler. He's director of transportation for the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. MORPC is a volunteer association of Central Ohio governments in 12 counties. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
The report cards we were just talking about that are issued by the American Society of Civil Engineers gave Ohio roads a D, the state's lowest grade. Is this an accurate assessment in your opinion, or at least when it comes to Central Ohio, Bob? How would you describe the condition of our roadways?
I think overall in the state, I think that it's an accurate appraisal. But I also think that in Central Ohio, our roads are in a little bit better shape than that. I think that we've been fortunate here to have a more dynamic economy, and as a result, we've been able to put more money into those kinds of things. Mr. Natal mentioned the stimulus package, and one of the things that was done with the money that came to Central Ohio was to do paving, which did improve the roads as well here.
But he said it was short term.
It is short term. A paving job like that could last for 5 or 7 years. You'll have to repave after that. At some point, roads will have to be completely reconstructed. You know, the typical life of a road is like 20 to 30 years. Bridges might have a life of up to 50 years. And we're seeing a lot of our bridges and on the interstate system especially reaching the end of their useful life and having to be replaced. So those are some of the problems we're going to be facing.
Sometimes, you're driving around Ohio and you're driving along some bumpy interstate road and you wonder, what in the world? Does anybody ever drive this and that should know better and see what the problem is? And I was wondering, LaVia Brockman, if you're confident that the state has a good system of monitoring its roadways and its bridges and so forth and is keeping track of them.
Sure. I think they do have a good system of monitoring. We recently looked at how the state and local folks, including county engineers in particular, could be working more closely together and, in fact, doing some consolidation of their operations and shared services. So, yes, I think there's good monitoring, but I think there's opportunity for cost savings that would also improve, improve services. A recent report we issued this week showed that there could be nearly $99 million in savings from government collaboration in managing the public works and transportation infrastructure system over the next decade based on some evaluations we did on current shared services. And really, I think, those savings would be squarely on the side of the taxpayer, but also would provide improved services And I think kind of building on what Mr. Natal was talking about with some of the longer-term investments, these savings aren't only going to help the Ohio Department of Transportation budget, but they provide an opportunity for some longer-term investments and really looking at kind of a paradigm shift in our whole transit system.
Bob Lawler just mentioned that Central Ohio is in pretty good shape. The economy is pretty vibrant, and we've been able to keep up with things so far. What about the big cities in the rest of Ohio that are not faring as well economically? Where are they compared to Central Ohio?
Well, we didn't look at a comparison, but I will say that I would agree with Bob that Central Ohio is stronger in general. But what's interesting too is the demographics. And again, Mr. Natal sort of mentioned some of the cultural changes occurring, like less driving, and the decrease in gas, and so in the usage of gas, and so in the gas tax revenues. And what's happening is that our demographics are changing, more increase in the millennial population. Those are the 20s and 30s, folks in their 20s and 30s, and they typically drive less, and they're more interested in different kinds of transit. So it's not really just looking at the quality and condition of our roads throughout our different cities, but also what is the demand in the population for transportation and transit opportunities.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the infrastructure in Ohio right now, in particular, Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment for my guests, you're welcome to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. So is enough being done to improve mass transit then? Ohio had the 12th highest ridership rate in 2010 in mass transit, but ranked 40th in the nation in percentage of state funds spent on public transit. Does that make sense?
We would say no. We're proponents of transit at the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. We believe that more state funds should be provided to support transit. And it's not just the traditional transit, like the COTA buses you see here in Central Ohio, but we're also concerned about human services transportation out in the rural areas and also within the community. I think Livia and the gentleman from ASC both mentioned the changing demographics. As we see more and more older folks, they're going to have to rely more and more on other people to drive them. And in a lot of places, you know, they're going to be trapped in their homes unless they have access to some kind of transit service out in those areas.
But, well, you know, when we talk about rising costs, something like mass transit outside of buses, you can keep adding buses incrementally. But when it comes to systems like rail, light rail, that high speed, that's extremely expensive and it just gets worse every minute.
It is extremely expensive. And I think we have to have a serious conversation in this state about how we could look at funding that. I mean, Ohio is blessed with a lot of strong urban areas. We're not a state that just has one strong urban area like Minnesota with Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Atlanta and Georgia. So we really have to look at this issue in a multifaceted way, and it's complicated.
Earlier this week, reports came out that data now show 809,798 people living in Columbus. And I guess that we're at a solid million plus now in the metro area. It's pretty obvious. It's expected to grow. All things being equal, can we afford the roads and bridges needed for that kind of growth, Bob Lawler? You said we're keeping up so far, but...
Well, I'm saying we're keeping up with the maintenance and the operating costs and things like that, but we're not keeping up with the expansions. We have, you know, many projects that need to be built around Central Ohio. There's a lot of bottlenecks. And one of the problems with these bottlenecks, it's not just for convenience, but it also is part of what makes our economy strong. One of the questions you posed to Mr. Natal was, why should people believe that ASCE, you know, is giving an honest report card? I think if you consult the business community, the chambers of commerce around the state, there's a whole host of organizations across the country that all agree that we need to invest a lot more money in transportation. So we have a lot of bottlenecks in our community that need to be addressed, as well as improvements we could make to our transit system.
A lot of that expansion's then the expansion out. Lavia Brockman, what about changing ideas about where we live?
Yeah, well,
so and we don't have to build out anymore.
Right. And that's certainly something that we at the Greater Ohio Policy Center think a lot about. And the other piece I would add to this in terms of, you know, looking at more multimodal kinds of opportunities is that we do need to reinvest in our current infrastructure. And if we accomplish the kinds of cost savings that we looked at through shared services, we can use some of those savings to invest in our current infrastructure, which would be an attraction to folks moving back into our cities and our older areas.
Shared services, you said you talked about the study you did that pointed to perhaps as much as $99 million in savings that could be spent, you know, elsewhere. What kind of traction are ideas like that really getting in the Ohio General Assembly right now? Because a lot of that would require legislation. It's something that Governor Kasich put forward the first year he was governor, is looking for shared savings. Does that really come into fruition, or are there more?
Well, actually, a lot of the test cases that we looked at, and those are occurring really all around the state in smaller ways, Summit County, Haakon County, a variety of different places, those don't require legislation. They're really just, they can be implemented locally. They can be consolidating different garages on a very specific level. County engineers can consolidate with ODOT. Garages consolidates purchasing of salt. So it really those kinds of examples don't require legislation. And when you aggregate those, they really add up.
There's some examples that have been taking place informally for a long time in central Ohio, and one notable one more recently. You mentioned the purchasing of salt. One of the things that the Franklin County Engineer has done for a long time is to help do a group purchase of salt for, you know, communities in central Ohio. He's also managed repaving programs for the townships for some of their roads. And I mentioned the stimulus package earlier. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of repaving done. And the county engineers in our area use those funds and manage them even inside municipalities just to make it operate more efficiently and more quickly. So there's a lot of examples, at least in the transportation arena, of people trying to work together to be more efficient.
But you brought up, though, the rural areas are the ones that struggle. They're more isolated. And, you know, I hear about township trustees who are out there filling potholes with gravel, things that are inconceivable in a place like Franklin County, but are out there happening. What about those kinds of communities?
I think that they would benefit well from shared services. I think we are also proponents of shared services, and we support the kinds of initiatives that Greater Ohio is going forward with. So we think that they would benefit from them, joint purchasing, consolidating their operations and things like that.
And I wanted to just add that in testimony by Director Ray, the director of ODOT.
Jerry
mm-hmm. Ray. They have been, I think, I want to commend them. They've been, I think, much more open about the fiscal realities, and they are trying to implement some other kinds of shared services at the local level. And there's lots of opportunity for that. So I really commend them for moving ahead on that. At the state level, and this could occur even without changes in legislation, there are opportunities, for instance, to have what we would call more permeable ODOT boundaries. ODOT has, they sort of divide
their districts.
Their district boundaries, correct. And sort of work cooperatively and sort of in coordination across those boundaries across the state. So, again, there are opportunities from, you know, within regions and across regions in the state to collaborate. And again, I think ODOT's starting to look at that.
The Cato Institute has recommended that the key to sound funding is with user fees that local governments can tap into. So local and state highway engineers receive proportionately sufficient money. Is that something that you're thinking about, too?
Well, you know, we, in the course of the last few years, as we've been looking into this issue, we've looked at user fees, a small increase in the sales tax. Clearly, we have to be very careful at this time as to what's recommended and how it plays into the larger tax issue, as we've seen with the budget bill. So, I'm not sure we would come down on the side of user fees at this time. Mm-hmm.
And MORPC hasn't taken a position on user fees. We recognize that there's a need for more revenue in the system, but You know, it isn't clear at this point in time how that's going to be accomplished. But as Mr. Natel pointed out, there's a huge deficit across the country. And most of the things that are being talked about today, they're financing mechanisms which allow you to borrow money from the future rather than add new money to make the improvements that are needed.
Cato also says that user fees give highway managers signals about where to spend the money, that it's another good reason for them. For instance, tolls. They have not gone over well in Ohio, and they were suggesting that a few years back. But what about things like tolls?
Tolls are a valuable tool to be used. They work well on the Ohio Turnpike. That's been a successfully managed road for a very long time, since before the interstate system. So I personally think tolls have a place in the financing of the transportation system.
No comment. Well, just walking away from this for a second, where do you see the most need then? Tell our listeners where you think there are the biggest problems in Central Ohio, Bob Lawler, right now, and that the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission would like to see addressed.
First and foremost, I think that it's important that we continue to invest in operating and maintaining the system we have. It doesn't do us any good if that deteriorates. It'll hurt our economy. Secondly, I think we need to take a look at the various bottlenecks that are around our community. They're especially on the freeways, interchanges, like at 71.
But does that mean building bigger freeways?
It depends on how you look at it. It's making them safer. It's making them more efficient. It's taking obsolete designs and replacing parts of interchanges with parts that operate more safely and more efficiently today. There's an example in Dublin where a lot of work is being done right now to remove some loop ramps and replace them with flyover and flyunder ramps that'll be safer and more efficient. So those kinds of bottlenecks need to be removed. You talked earlier about redesigning our land use patterns and things like that. Going forward, we need to be concerned about that, because as we expand into the rural areas, as we expand further out and put greater demands on the transportation system, it'll become increasingly hard to maintain and operate those. So if we can entice people to live in denser or closer in, then we can better utilize infrastructure we already have. So going with that, we also need a more robust transit system that would benefit our population both now and as we age.
Olivia Brockman, any?
Yeah, I would just say I would really encourage ODOT and really any of those of us working in the infrastructure field to look at some predictive models and how what we've been on the path towards over the last 20 to 30 years, how that really doesn't reconcile with the demographics that we talked about. And you mentioned that, we've been growing outward. We've been consuming a lot more land than we have population, than populations, which has really decreased in this state, except for in Central Ohio. And I think we need to really look at those trends and figure out how to capitalize on the demographics of those who want more walkable neighborhoods, such as millennials and baby boomers, and what that means for a transit system in the state.
Well, thanks for joining us today to talk about it. It's obviously an ongoing subject. We'll broach it again in the future, I'm sure. Olivia Brockman of the Greater Ohio Policy Center, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
And also Bob Lawler. He's Director of Transportation at the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Bob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ann.
Coming up, we will continue our conversation with the author of a book, highly critical of how the nation manages its infrastructure. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Columbus Dance Theater, presenting A Midsummer Night's Dream, a full-length ballet accompanied by live music from Carpe Diem String Quartet. The company brings Shakespeare's classic tale to life with three performances at the Lincoln Theater, Friday, May 31st and Saturday, June 1st. Details at columbusdancetheater.com.
Thursday night, WOSU-TV takes you across the country on North America's most spectacular railways. More than just a tour, Trains Around North America traces railroad history. The show recounts the unforgettable stories of the continent's historic and scenic tourist railroads. From quiet and relaxing trains featuring spectacular meals and views to fast-paced trains full of glitz and glamour. All aboard for Trains Around North America, Thursday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. Columbus on the Record brings you the week's top news stories with in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis. From the Ohio State House to Columbus City Hall, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the issues and stories impacting life in Central Ohio. The show goes beyond the headlines to explore all sides of each issue. Watch Columbus on the Record Friday nights at 8:30 on WOSU-TV and watch full episodes online at wosu.org/cotr. Support 89.7 NPR News at $85 and receive the WOSU member card, good for discounts at more than 200 partners. Visit wosu.org/membercard.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week's bridge collapse brought to mind the 2007 bridge collapse in Minneapolis.
You are looking live at an absolute horror unfolding before our eyes in the city of Minneapolis. The Interstate 35 bridge has collapsed. People are said to be in the water. Cars and trucks have tumbled off. An 18-wheeler is up in flames. We have absolutely no idea what caused this, but we can see an absolute tragedy has developed.
It was like something out of a disaster movie. The collapse ended up claiming the lives of 13 people and injured more than 100 others. And Barry LePatner was incensed by the event, a New York construction attorney and author of Too Big to Fall, America's Failing Infrastructure and the Way Forward. Barry LePatner said that Minnesota officials were in denial about the dangers, and he has argued that the rest of the nation is too. He joins us today by phone from New York. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Good to join you this morning, Ann.
So you were angry at the time of the Minnesota bridge collapse. Are you any less angry?
Well, at the time of that collapse and through to today, our nation has experienced nearly 600 bridge failures since 1989. The problem that we're facing today is truly, as you said, one of denial. After the Minnesota bridge collapse, amazingly, against many, many engineers' criticism, the NTSB found a fluky reason, so-called design defects of gusset plates, as a rationale for why the I-35W bridge collapsed, and they ignored the reality that it was a structurally deficient bridge rated poor, which means they had to close lanes for lack of maintenance and corrosion and other reasons, and that it was fracture critical, meaning if one piece breaks, the bridge goes straight down. We now saw the I-5 bridge, which if you look at them side by side in pictures, it looks like a scissor sheared off the deck, and it fell down just like the I-35W. At that time, I did the research. I found out that there are 8,000 bridges alike, structurally deficient, meaning no maintenance for many, many, many years, and fracture-critical design, so there's no redundancy. If one piece breaks, the bridge goes straight down. And against all acknowledged engineering studies, the federal government refused to make the repairs to those 8,000 bridges. And today, every member of the traveling public is as much at risk as those poor people who died or were injured on those bridges.
The Cato Institute has said that the infrastructure is not the problem, that by far more people die in traffic accidents, and that it's no competition, and if we work harder to make our roads safer in terms of traffic and congestion in that way, that's what's the problem, not things like bridges and so forth.
All of these bridges that are on that list and on the website I created, saveourbridges.com, where you can see a Google map of all of them for anybody to look at and avoid. All of those bridges, by every engineering standard, are going to fail. The physics, the engineering, the lack of maintenance, and the fact that if one piece breaks, it goes straight down is a reality. This is not me saying this. This is every bridge engineer in the country knows what I'm saying.
My guest is Barry LePatner. He's a construction lawyer and author of Too Big to Fall, America's Failing Infrastructure and the Way Forward. If you have a question for Barry LePatner, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Bill in Gahanna. He says the I-5 bridge collapsed because a truck was illegally operated over the bridge. Its load was too big for the bridge. If the bridge was so fragile that it could not withstand this collision, it should have been closed to all traffic long ago. Is the bottom line from this discussion that taxpayers must spend hundreds of millions of dollars to protect ourselves from illegal truck operations? So, right. Interesting question, Barry LePatner. This bridge collapsed because the truck was too big for it. Is it the trucker's fault or what?
It is the officials who know what I've researched at great length based on all the bridge engineers I've spoken to, that those bridges are extremely fragile. If it would not have been a truck hitting one member, and by the way, the reason it was functionally obsolete was the design for those lanes were too narrow. Any bridge engineer, any transportation person in the state of Washington should have known readily that those roadways on that bridge were too narrow for an overloaded truck and should have banned those trucks. They didn't. They knew the case. But if that hadn't happened, any one of 100 other causes to affect a bridge that has not had adequate maintenance and is suffering badly, everyone should have known it was going to collapse sooner or later.
The 2007 Minnesota bridge collapse was perhaps bad timing. Maybe if it had occurred 10 or 15 years earlier during more of an economic heyday, things would have been better. But things couldn't be worse. And now we're in a state of sequestration across the nation. What are your expectations for moving forward and actually getting the funding to fix the problems that you see?
Let's understand one thing by Washington, D.C. standards, mm-hmm. and I speak there, and I'll be down speaking before the National Academy of Design later this month in June. The money for fixing these dangerous bridges is there. No one denies it. It's just not being properly allocated. Hundreds of billions of dollars are allocated by Congress for transportation issues. But the problem is that Congress has passed a statement, a law, as part of the transportation bills that says the federal government cannot tell the states how to use money. Even if it's designated for maintenance, the states use it for new projects to fund campaign contributors' requests. And because fixing the underside of a bridge is not a photo op, the money is there. There's no question about it. We lack the political will and the political leadership to correct this perilous condition.
So where is the money being improperly allocated? Can you be more specific? Is it to things like other than roads and bridges, or are you talking about rail and mass transit?
In every state, in every county, money comes to officials for fixing roads, fixing bridges, and attending to all of these problems. But in every county, you will find a campaign contributor to a politician built a shopping center 12 miles out of town, and that politician applies money to a road going all the way out to the shopping center and calls it a transportation project. And bingo, it satisfied the state. It may not make anybody happy who's going over dangerous bridges, but that kind of pork belly legislation, that kind of entitlement money, whatever word you want to use, is not going where it should be going to fix our dangerous infrastructure.
There's been an increase in private investment in the infrastructure. You see it all around Central Ohio. Is that something that comforts you or not?
Well, it is, but it's not being done anywhere near the level that we need. Also, the fact is we need a national or state increase in infrastructure banks where the government seeds money and acts like a bank. It lends money which can be leveraged to fix or to put in new infrastructure projects. there is money waiting in the wings to be used for infrastructure projects in this country. We have not mobilized a happy medium between government figuring out how to do this properly and outside investor interests figuring out with the government how to make a fair return on investment over the long term.
How long do you think it's going to be before, at this point, nobody famous has died, nobody's famous son or daughter has died in one of these accidents? Do you think that's what it's going to take? What do you think it will take at this point to move Congress, which doesn't move for a lot of things these days?
I am certain that it's not going to come from the political leadership at state or federal levels, which is why last August, on the fifth anniversary of the tragic collapse of the I-35W in Minneapolis, I came out with the SaveOurBridges.com website. Mm-hmm. Anyone can go on it, put in their zip code, or just type in the name of their city and state, and you will see all of the bridges that I have designated around the country, 8,000, nearly 160 in every state, that should not be used by our school children going over in yellow school buses, by our friends and family going to church or shopping or other things. And just like this bridge, which was on that list, every transportation official should be notified by communities. We're not going to tolerate this any longer. If it's not going to come from the grassroots level, it's not going to happen.
Because you're talking about grassroots level, because at the local governmental level, it seems like they wait with bated breath and don't want to tick anybody off, rub anybody the wrong way, step on any toes. They want it. It's so the funding is so coveted now that they're just trying to be on their best behavior.
Well, nobody wants to raise taxes, so mm-hmm. we haven't had an increase in the gas tax in 20 years. It's 1993 when it went up 4% in the Clinton administration.
Right.
We haven't had an increase in the transportation allocation for funding because of austerity and sequestration. And the infrastructure, and it's not just roads and bridges, it's dams, it's leaking water pipes, all of these are deteriorating at a monstrous rate, and today turn the United States into an infrastructure third world country.
The American Society of Civil Engineers has given the U.S. infrastructure poor grades this year as usual. I mean, if you think a D is poor, but it is up from a D to a D plus. So are we headed in the right direction? Are we headed there fast enough?
I've been extraordinarily critical of the American Society of Civil Engineers, who know better. The fact that they rate bridges within the report card, they rate our bridges as C plus, is nothing less than appalling. I have spoken before those groups and I've said, how can you know, as I know, that there are 8,000 bridges that could collapse in a moment's notice affecting the traveling public and will fail at one time or another in the years ahead? How dare you give the bridges a C plus and not a D minus or an F? They hang their heads, they put it down, and have no answer for that. So we can look to the good side of the ASCE of saying our infrastructure is in bad shape, but we can't look to them as making a clarion call as to the real perils affecting the traveling public as so far as our bridges are concerned.
When you talk about those 8,000 bridges on your SaveOurBridges.com website, you said at least 160 in every state. Are those 8,000 bridges you say that should be taken down and replaced, or just need improvements?
Oh, they just need improvements. And let me give you, if you go on the website, you'll see the statement. 2,000 of those 8,000 carry the most traffic. Okay, I mean, we saw this bridge, the I-5, had 70,000. The I-35 in Minnesota had 140,000. The Tappan Zee Bridge in New York State has 139,000. We have bridges that are fracture critical and structurally deficient on this list. If we took the top 2,000 of the 8,000, here's what would happen. It would cost probably less than $60 billion. But as soon as we paid that money out, we'd employ 1 to 2 million construction workers for 2 years, and those workers are currently unemployed. Number two, as soon as they took the money that they would be paid, a third of it would come back in the form of taxes, so it wouldn't cost the full amount of that $60 billion. And on top of that, we would be able to have infrastructure for many, many of these bridges carrying millions of people every day safe by adding redundancy to each one of those bridges.
What about working to reduce the wear and tear on our roads and bridges by improving mass transit? Should that be a priority?
Of course. Of course. We need no one simple solution. There's no magic bullet to our transportation ills in this country. We have to do mass transportation work. We have to encourage, where appropriate, high-speed rail, and where it's going to be cost-effective in the long run, not just every place that somebody imagines it. We have to put in congestion pricing in cities for roads and tunnels that lead traffic unnecessarily into our cores of our cities. And we have to address congestion, which costs our nation over $100 billion a year in people sitting in traffic and wasting fuel.
Well, Barry LePatner, I want to thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, and good being with you today.
Barry LePatner, he's a construction lawyer and author of Too Big to Fall, America's Failing Infrastructure and the Way Forward. You can discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/All Sides. From our website, you can listen and watch the show live weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon. You can also explore the archive, which includes audio, video, and podcasts of every show, just like this one. That's at WOSU.org/All Sides. Thanks a lot for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.